Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Art of Living radio show with me, Victoria Mary Clark. Today I'm talking to a very unusual guy, and his name is actually Guy. Guy Harriman. Welcome to the Art of Living.
Thank you very much, Victoria. And it's actually wonderful to be back in Ireland.
Because you live in Thailand.
I live in Thailand, but I've had a long journey.
Nice place to live.
Yes. Beautiful. Well, as I told you earlier, my mother grew up in Dunleary, went to Trinity College, became a doctor, psychiatrist, actually.
Oh, a psychiatrist. You didn't say 40s. That. No. You said doctor.
Well, that was the first thing. And then my father was from Belfast.
And you're Shane's cousin.
I am indeed, because the McGowans and the Harrimans used to hang out together in the north of Ireland. So the Harrimans were Rennie, my uncle.
I've heard a lot about Rennie. Shane tells a lot of stories about Rennie.
Yeah, he's a real character. And then Auntie May, and then my father Dennis. Mm-hmm. And they had a French mother who refused to speak English.
I heard that story. It's a good one.
So my father was really embarrassed when he was a young boy because everyone was queuing up for the cinema, and she would send him to the front of the queue and tell him to let her in, to make her let in, because she couldn't speak English.
Right.
So that kind of thing was going on. But he also was a great jazz violinist and pianist. And so he had his own band that was on the radio in the 40s, and they were playing traditional jazz, you know, boogie-woogie and stuff like that. And so all the GIs during the war listened to his music. So he had actually a very musical and wild side to him. When he graduated, he went to Inst, and then when he graduated, he became a doctor in the army and went to India. And he never saw any action, which he was always upset about, because so he joined a parachute regiment and did stuff like that.
Gosh!
So he did some wild stuff, but unfortunately, he was also born in a generation where doing your duty was very important.
Mm.
And so he was a neuropathologist, went over to Leeds, had his own department, and doing a lot of very leading edge research in malignant hyperpyrexia, which is fairly rare. Disorder about people having general anaesthetics and dying from it.
Oh yeah, some people do.
Yeah, and so he'd do biopsies and all sorts of stuff. Also muscular dystrophy and all sorts of other stuff. He ended up with a DSC, which is very hard to get. He was a fellow of the Royal College of Physicians. But he spent his whole life looking down the microscope.
And you?
Picked that up.
You're into creating interesting things.
Yes.
And you've created something called the Ajna Light Box.
Yes, that's right. Well, created me.
Oh. And I've just spent half an hour on it. And it's so beautiful that I was thinking, gosh, how could you get away with spending like most of your life doing this and, you know, very little of your life doing the normal stuff?
The real stuff, yeah.
Well, because it's just such a lovely thing.
Well, our divine nature is the nature of joy, because the universe...
Shall we explain it to the listeners what
it is? Okay, well, the Ajna light is an entrainment device, but it's a light and sound device. Of course, these were really popular in the 70s, 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
And then they fell out of favour.
And there was places you could go and put on goggles and...
Yeah, and the goggles, unfortunately, the technology in those days was very weak. You can't use strong LEDs close to the eye. People go, but I'm using these totally over the top 10 watt LEDs that you're not allowed to look into. You have to have your eyes closed.
Yeah.
Of course, you can set the intensity way down for people who are sensitive. But what's being entrained with light is the carrier frequency of light. And so if you think of radio waves versus sound waves, radio waves can carry radio and television and things like that, a lot of information, because the modulation can be very wide.
I don't understand how they work. I mean, that baffles
well,
me.
I just told you.
So
that modulation. Because I guess I should say, I went to medical school, dropped out after a year, and then started building music synthesizers. And so I was doing the analog synthesizers back in the 70s.
Gosh, you must have been so popular, were you?
It was fun. I had just a great time. I built this sequencer that was doing all sorts of wacky stuff and would go backwards and forwards. And things
Beach
like
Boy
that.
Types, you know, like on the Beach Boys record?
No, I was pretty bizarre. So I was doing abstract music and stuff like that. Not for human consumption. But it's for my own thing. But it gave me soldering skills and a real understanding of electronics. And then I decided to go back to university and do electronics. But I graduated in 79 from UMIST, University of Manchester Institute of Science and Technology. And then the year I graduated, the top funding of the National Enterprise Board, which is the Callaghan and Thatcher big deal to get Britain into high tech, was actually funded, £50 million. And it was amazing that both governments funded half.
Right.
And we had this fab in Newport that Richard Rogers designed, who did the Pompidou Centre.
Yeah, yeah.
It's beautiful, but it leaked. It was all made of glass, and so they had to put buckets of water when it rained. But I was the lead designer of a parallel processing microprocessor called the Transputer.
I'm not even going to pretend to understand.
Okay, but you can imagine.
It sounds like Star Trek to me.
It was amazing. We could, in fact, I built a system for Southampton University with over 1,000 transputers, no other components. They had internal memory, 4 serial links, and a processor. And I wrote all the microcode. I designed the serial links.
So you were writing code in the 70s?
Yeah, well, chip design, yeah.
Before people had even heard of
coding. In those days, people were doing chip design through graphical processes. They were drawing out schematics, like for a board. But we went straight in from computer science.
Right.
And then a company called Next, which Steve Jobs founded after he was thrown out of Apple, they were doing the most amazing work. And he had the best people in Silicon Valley working there. But Pixar used it was boards of 16 transputers to render an animation called Tin Toy.
Oh, yes.
So Tin Toy was before Toy Story, but the little angle poised lamp came from Tin Toy. And using their Silicon Graphics hardware would have taken 3 years to do the rendering. But my friend Jeff Mock had designed this board, plugging into some workstations, did it in 3 months. So then he came and did a sabbatical with us in Bristol, and then at the end of his 6 months I said, could you introduce me to Steve, because I was wanting to get into the Valley. And so he did, and I got a company called LSI to pay for my ticket to go over to interview for them. And then in the middle of all that I sneaked out and I went over to Next in Palo Alto for an interview there, and started at 8 o'clock in the morning. And it was totally brutal. Everyone in the company would interviewed me like 6 or 7 at a time. And Steve said hello to me at the beginning and said, okay, I'll see you later. It obviously went fine because some of the people who worked at Pixar knew me and it was all good. And so Steve poked his head around the door at 11:30 and said, well, everyone seems to like you, so I want you to start working here. So, well... but I'm interviewing at LSI. Well, they're a bunch of bozos. Who'd work for them? So, oh, okay.
So you worked for Steve Jobs. And you said that you were the only person he didn't shout at.
In the whole time I was there for 4 years.
That is amazing. Because he doesn't have a great reputation.
Ripped people to shreds.
Yeah.
Ripped people to shreds. But he and I were both vegans. His daughter went to the same Waldorf school my daughter went to over there. But he would never talk about anything private. But... one thing I remember very well, he lived down the road from me in Palo Alto for the first year I was there. And Tamsin, my daughter, was 2 then. And so he'd be walking by with Reed in his Porsche black stroller.
A Porsche stroller.
Because Steve bought all the black Porsches that were in the Valley. I mean, that was his thing. You know, he loved beautiful things. So
yeah, why not?
He had his stroller made in the same colour.
Yeah.
But
so
anyway,
you didn't try to marry your kid to his kid? And
not no. Nothing like that. But no. Actually, Tamsin had a very English accent then. And he would love Tamsin say, hello, Steve. And he would like that. But anyway, so I had an introduction through that to the best technology in the Valley. And then I went to work for a company called Cisco and a load of other startups.
They're quite well known.
Yeah, so Cisco, I was there from 94 to 2000. If you think about the internet, the software for the internet was done at Next. So CERN were using Next workstations running the web objects because Next software was way ahead of anything else. But the hardware was built by Cisco.
Right.
And so I was working for them. And I always refused to go into management. So I was just doing my own thing, being an engineer.
Yeah.
But I was also always going to yoga. And I started yoga when I graduated. So...
Why did you start yoga?
For physical reasons. Because... Okay, this is going to be a random thing, but... I was sent to a Jesuit boarding school in England called Stonyhurst, 500-year-old school, and Arthur Conan Doyle went there. Moriarty, who became the Solicitor General for Ireland in the 1920s, he was a monitor several classes above Arthur Conan Doyle, and Arthur Conan Doyle hated him.
So that's why he called him
Moriarty. Yeah. But Stonyhurst was pretty famous. Gerald Manley Hopkins taught there, for example.
Right.
And Evelyn Waugh wrote a book called Brideshead Revisited.
I did read that book.
And Bridie went to Stonyhurst. So it was a very famous
nice school.
No, it's a horrible school.
Is that why you did yoga? Because it was so horrible?
If you really want to know why I did yoga, there was a Jesuit who came back from India. And my mother told me when I was about 12, I'd come back from school holidays and talk about this priest. And he was doing these strange... I remember him sitting on the desks. He was doing yoga poses. It was so strange. And I just felt compelled or really interested in yoga.
Yeah.
But it was only when I graduated and met my girlfriend, who became Tamsin's mother, who was a total hippie type, that I got, maybe I can do yoga. And
right.
She's vegetarian from birth, so vegetarian. So anyway, that was the beginning of yoga, but I always knew I was doing it to help my body. Because in medical school I decided I am not letting the system get hold of me.
So you haven't been sick for a very long time.
I haven't seen a doctor since I was a teen.
Since you were a teen.
I never go, and you know, unless I go for something like has to be corrected, you know, like a vasectomy. And it's like, okay, I'm not having more children, so I go and have a vasectomy. I don't give any power to the MDs. I do all my own research. I use essential oils. I do energy work. I work with crystals. And healing
it's obviously working for you.
I feel the best ever in my life, but I do wacky stuff.
And you don't eat.
Okay, not eating is a very good idea.
It's a very good idea.
It really is, seriously.
Really? Why?
Rats who are calorie restricted live twice as long.
Yeah.
It's not just a tiny one, it's literally twice as long.
Gosh.
And I guess I'm a good lab rat. Because I follow my intuition. So years ago I started doing intermittent fasting. I said... no breakfast at the age of 30. It's just like, okay.
No breakfast.
Well, no alcohol at the age of 21. That was my first vow. And I'm a monk.
Yeah.
And I've been a monk many lives. And I just said, okay, I'm following my vows. But my vows come from myself, not from outside. So the next vow was no eating breakfast. And I haven't touched...
Did you not miss breakfast? Isn't breakfast one of the nicest
horrible,
meals of the day?
Because if you give your body 1 month, you get out of the seduction. It's the seduction of breakfast is wonderful. But it's physiologically the worst meal you can eat in a day.
Why? Because everyone says it's the most important meal of the day.
And everyone's out to lunch. Or out to breakfast. Breakfast is actually... If you think about how the body works, it's very simple. You go into sympathetic activation, and have a sympathetic nervous system... active, going out hunting, gathering, doing a thing like a dog would.
Yeah.
Dogs not eating during the day.
Don't they?
No, not unless humans give them food. You know, they have 24 hours between their meals, you know, if they're hunting in nature.
24 hours?
Yeah, it's normal. So you're active, hunting, gathering, doing your thing. And that's when you need to be present and alert. And the reason people drink coffee is to...
make them present and alert. Here I am drinking coffee right now.
Yeah, right. I'm not going to say anything about it. But the thing is, you're stressing your adrenals like crazy because you're overloading them to get alert. But I'm totally alert in the morning. I get up, I do my practice, and I'm alert right from the beginning. The parasympathetic nervous system naturally comes into effect at 6 p.m.
Yes.
Now, the Egyptians, the Romans, and the Greek, the free men... their breaking of the fast was at 6 p.m. The slaves were on carbs.
Oh.
So it's much cheaper to give wheat to the slaves who are doing the work in the fields. Buddha in yoga, same thing. The yogis eat after six naturally. And the Buddha came along and said, well, we don't want to speak Sanskrit, we'll speak the common people's language of Pali. And so we need to, the bhikkhus have to go begging when the people are going to work in the fields, which is 5 a.m. So they send them out to beg from the common people. And so they switched everything around.
Mm.
Now, I became a monk in Thailand. That's another whole long story.
Uh-huh.
But I got into severe trouble from the abbot. It's called Luang Pho of Wat Tham Tong, the abbot I was ordained in. And I was actually the only foreigner ever ordained there. But because he said to me, well, you're eating once a day, you can eat any time you like. I said, no, this is my vow. He said, well, it's just one time a day. Well, I said, but hang on, one time a day, well, why don't you eat after six? It's more natural. And so he gave up on me then. But the only thing I could do was I could drink coconut milk.
Right.
I'd gone around the local villages and I bought all the little boxes of coconut milk I could.
Mm-hmm.
And until it was about 19 days. And then he allowed Moy, my partner, Thai partner, who is a nun in the same what, to make a smoothie for me. And I was allowed to drink the smoothie.
Right.
But to give you an idea how it works in Thailand, when she came to give me my smoothie, I had to kneel down. I had to put my robe out and a special cloth. She had to put the smoothie on the cloth. I had to draw it towards me and then lift it because the monks aren't allowed to be touched by women.
Ah, so you could even be married to somebody
who's a nun. Well, no, we weren't married. We were brahmacharya, so it was...
So that means no sex?
Yeah, it was a spiritual relationship.
Right. And we have to take a short break. Yeah. But we'll come back and talk more. We have to actually talk about your life.
Yes, we're getting
okay.
103.2 Dublin City FM. Our number is 865-8020.
So welcome back to The Art of Living. And today's guest is just so interesting that it's quite hard to contain everything in this one interview. But Guy, I think it's important that we sort of guide it back to your actual light box. Because it's really cool. So briefly, you did, after working in Silicon Valley, you moved to Thailand and you now run a healing center in Thailand. And it was at your healing center that you got the idea to make this machine.
So, yeah, exactly. So after I was ordained a monk, I was actually given a download that given a very clear guidance. I had to sell my house in California.
Right.
I moved to Thailand. And I just bought some land for trees because I already had a house in Thailand, in Chiang Mai. But I was told 7 years of inner work. So I spent 3 years building the healing center, you know, literally doing, on my one meal a day thing, doing all the plumbing, all the electrical work, actually built the walls and
stuff.
So you're
kind of a Superman.
No, just...
Yeah, I think you are.
I'm Pythagorean. Okay, because Pythagoras was always my hero at school.
Yeah.
Pythagoras, the Greek philosophers were generalists. He was a music therapist, a mathematician, an engineer, and a spiritual leader. He wrote the Ekkasmata, which became the parables in the New Testament. And he was vegan.
So did he only eat one meal a day?
Yeah.
He did?
Yeah.
Gosh, this is
amazing. And they refused, because they were vegan, they didn't wear animal clothing, they wouldn't wear wool and stuff like that.
Just before we go to the light,
we could get
is your one meal a day? Is it like big meal?
No, it took me many years, but I've got to the point where I'm raw vegan for the last 3 years.
Raw vegan, so it's just a salad.
I have one salad a day. It's a really good salad.
You could be a supermodel.
Well, I mean, how much fat subcutaneous fat?
You've got no fat whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm like, but my
perhaps you could
really
train
happy.
Supermodels so that they could, you know.
But if you look at my skin, it doesn't look like 60-year-old skin.
Not at all.
No. But I've been just doing it through
this
listening.
This is what
to
you're
going to
do now. I'm giving you guidance. You're going to open an academy for supermodels.
Thank you. Will you send them to me? So the light came to me in the sixth year, and it was two Australians, friends of friends of friends, literally, said, can we come to your healing center and demonstrate this light thing?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, sure, I don't know anything about it, why not? And it worked.
So what it like for you, what did it do to you? Because I know what it did to me. It just made me feel really relaxed, but also kind of like It was like being in a really beautiful dream where things were just unfolding and it was all really beautiful. And there's lots of coloury patterns. It was just really pleasant. But I was totally, conscious.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That is what it does. It takes you into the dream state or the Akasha in yoga or the informational field in quantum physics. And this process called melanopsin that the light is using, and totally by chance, because I did what I got in a download after being on that light, which is actually developed by two Austrian doctors called the Lucia light.
Mm-hmm.
I was just gardening that weekend and I got everything I had to do. And Wi-Fi hotspot, it's a web app, it's running in the browser, anyone can use it from their tablet or phone. It's got these 10 watt LEDs, the cool white LEDs. If I'd done the smallest amount of research, the smallest amount, I would not have done it the way I did it.
Right.
But I followed what I was told to do.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 months later, I had my prototype. And I had no idea
what it was. So your prototype is not very big. It's about the size of... size of what?
it's a golden box.
Yes.
With a snake on the side, uh-huh. which comes from Abydos.
What does it weigh?
It weighs 600 grams.
600 grams.
It's got a computer inside it, and then the board I developed, which is the LEDs, and...
So it's small enough to carry around.
There's a little... when I sell it in a very nice carrying bag, purple mm-hmm. bag. And it has its own way in the world. Each one is a little baby, and I ask the people who buy the light to name their baby.
Mm-hmm.
And delivery is worldwide, so it's very easy delivery. There's no forceps.
So people can actually have their own light machine for themselves and use it at home?
Absolutely. But what I'm finding is a lot of therapists are using it, and they're using it with their clients.
Right.
And it does 90% of the work.
When you say the work, what exactly?
Well, in my case...
Is it a healing tool?
It's a self-healing. I call it light self-therapy.
Mm.
So in my case... I started doing Reiki and teaching Reiki in 1996. Do all sorts of energy work, craniosacral, reflexology, Thai massage, body work and yoga mm-hmm. and all that stuff. I've actually given all that up because I'm focusing on the light, because I know this is my journey now. But when people come to me, I would say my therapy is basically emotional healing.
Right.
And it's done through entrainment and presence. I listen to the person's story, like my mother did, who is a Jungian psychiatrist.
Mm.
She never, ever put anyone on drugs. She would take people off their drugs that the GPs had put them on. She would be shot now as a psychiatrist.
Yeah, yeah.
This is back in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
And she worked with suicidal young women. She was a classic wounded healer.
Mm.
And all her dysfunction came out at home, of course. But she clearly taught me that. And I used to read Jung when I was growing up. And so it's this emotional, working on the emotional kosher. But the integration and the making it real for the person is after the Dharma talk of let's hold space and let's see, just mirror and show what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You go on the light and then the light teaches you. And I can put any number of people on the same exact stimulation, same light process, the same music, and they get totally different patterns.
Right.
And not only that, the same person, week after week, totally different stuff.
Okay.
And with the Lucia light, the two Austrian doctors, I met them in Munich this January, but Dirk and Engelbert, a neurologist and a psychologist. Again, they wanted to take their patients off drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And the depressed people, you can't really reach depressed people.
No,
but
it's hard.
Through entrainment, you can get them into a gamma state. Gamma state's very joyful.
Right.
And so you've got all that going on, but you've also got the information coming through because of the melanopsin process, which is turning, doing what you do every night when you go to sleep. Every single person does it. The thalamocortical cortical region of the brain is a switch.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns you from external visionary to internal vision.
Yeah.
The internal vision comes through the pineal gland.
Right. So you're stimulating the pineal gland.
There's a whole physiological process to there. But you're awake, like you said. You got all these beautiful dreamlike states, yeah, psychedelics, but you're awake.
Yeah. And I was thinking, gosh, if I had coloured pencils, I'd be drawing all this stuff, but it would be quite hard to catch up, because, like, you just they keep changing.
in 123 years, there's going to be a process which allows people to capture their inner state by picking up the field energy around them and show it as video.
Oh,
it's going to be 123 years then, before it comes.
Why 123 years?
I asked, and that's what I was told. my guidance is actually very, very clear about things like that.
Right.
Like, you know, with Shane.
Yeah, yeah. So, what do you do with your light machines now? People have to go to Thailand, or
no,
they...
No, no, no.
They could go to Thailand.
I'm a tinker. When I visited my cousins and Shane cousins in Tunbridge Wells, and Michelle, first thing she said to me, well, you're a travelling salesman.
Yes, you are now a travelling salesman.
But I'm actually an engineer, and it's not my thing, but I was told I had to go out into the world, so I go to all these festivals. And then when people, I was in Egypt just before coming,
mm-hmm.
and then France, you know, various people say, come and give a talk.
Yeah.
And I love to do that. And so in the Buddha bag here, it's beautiful, you know, Paul
yes.
allowed me to do that. And then I met you, Victoria, and all the wonderful people in the group. So I just follow guidance. You know, when somebody says, yes, do it, I come and do it. And then through that, you know, maybe somebody wants to buy a light and then they share it. So it's all peer-to-peer.
Mm.
I don't do any MLM, any marketing.
No, so there's no, like, pyramid structures, none of that.
There's no contracts, there's no exclusivity. And a number of people have said, I want to be the person in Australia.
The rep.
I say no.
Yeah.
Because it's unfair.
Mm-hmm.
Each person who buys a light can become an ambassador of the light.
Yeah.
And they get a commission for selling and supporting to another person. That way is the divine feminine. It's creating a web, like the World Wide Web of Light.
A World Wide Web of Light. That's nice.
And that's what I was told to do.
Yeah.
Not do it from the old fear-based paradigm. I'm the man I control, and you have to come to me.
Yeah,
I give, you take, you know, I take your power, and then you have to come to me for permission. No. I refuse to do that. I've always worked with the divine feminine. I did Wicca in California in a shop called 13.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm just a wild Irishman, I guess. Because I'm actually getting Irish citizenship because my mother being born in Ireland.
So. Cool. So if somebody wants to check out the light, where do they go now?
Okay, two things. The Ajna light, Ajna itself, the Ajna chakra, A-J-N-A light.
Light.
Facebook group. And it's a very vibrant group.
Mm-hmm.
Started it 6 months ago, now we're up to about 700 people. And all these people are... sharing their experiences with the light.
So you can find out what other people's experiences are.
And they help each other. Now I call it a community because I can't alone bring the light into the world. It's all the people who resonate with it and love it and have soul contracts around it that will do it. My job is to be, I'm like the caretaker bringing it out there. But the real people who bring it out, they're the ones, I'm sure some of the people are listening, who understand what it is in their heart.
Yeah.
And in the Buddha bag, there's so many people who came to me and said, I never come to these meetings, but I told I had to come tonight.
Yeah.
That's the magic.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking, you know, not looking, I mean, those people are coming, and I'm showing up for those people. And if it talks to your heart, it talks to your soul, because the soul is inside the heart. And the light works through the heart. The physiology is in the head, but that's just the doorway.
Is there a website as well as
the
Facebook?
Yes, there is. Ajnalight.com.
.com.
So just ajnalight.com.
Cool.
And if you're crazy enough and you want to search for Guy Harriman,
do that too.
You'll do that, but yeah, and you'll get all the wacky stuff as well.
Thank you so much for being on The Art of Living.
It's a real pleasure, Victoria.
It's been a joy having you.